Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Indeed, Jim Garrity of National Review is back today. He's also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And best of all for Jim, June is almost over. It's been a very busy month for Jim, given the book launch and so many other things. So congratulations on surviving the past 30 days.
Thank you. Good to be back. And I'm glad I was able to come back on a slow news day where nothing big was going on. Right, Greg?
Exactly. It's like tossing you right back into the fire. So let's start with a double-headed good martini. The final two major decisions we were waiting for from the U.S. Supreme Court both came down today, both written by Justice Alito. Both 5-4 decisions, and usually if Justice Alito is writing the majority opinion, it's something conservatives are going to be relatively pleased with, and that's essentially the case today. The first issue that came down was Harris versus Quinn. That's a union case. This is the summary from the Associated Press. The Supreme Court dealt a blow to public sector unions Monday, ruling that thousands of home health care workers in Illinois cannot be required to pay fees that help cover the union's cost of collective bargaining in a 5-4 split among ideological lines. The justices said the practice violates the First Amendment rights of non-members who disagree with the positions that unions take. There's certainly more to potentially get into in there. The more awaited decision today was the Hobby Lobby Conestoga Woods challenge of the Health and Human Services mandate on contraception contained within Obamacare. Closely held corporations, read that as not publicly traded companies, and that's about 90% of businesses in America, are not required to provide contraception and specifically abortifacients if it violates the conscience of those who own the company. The court very clear in saying that this does not apply to all sorts of other things, like if your religion suggests you shouldn't pay your taxes, they're not going to let you get away with that sort of thing. The liberals howling on both decisions. Jim, both pretty narrow, but both pretty good for conservatives.
Yeah, I can understand that people want to characterize this as more of a relieved reaction to these decisions than a thrilled or overjoyed reaction to them. Because basically, look, one, it seems like the majority did want to narrowly tailor these decisions and to emphasize, look, you like to see the government be a little reserved and a little discretion when it comes to forcing companies to pay for stuff. And when, you know, a group like Hobby Lobby says, look, we are an organization, family run, that has deeply religious views. By making us pay for this, you're violating our deeply religious view. Now, you'd like to say the government say, all right, we should not be in the business of telling people to violate their consciences and violate their religious views, so we're going to take a very limited role to this. It appears it occurred in this one. Maybe it didn't go quite as far as a bunch of conservatives would have liked to have hoped. You know, the left is quick to point out that, well, okay, now we can just, you know, have the government programs pay for birth control instead of requiring employers to pay for it. But it's nice to see 5-4 deciding that actually, once you make widgets, you don't stop being a person whose religious views can be violated whenever they like. On the other one, again, there are a bunch of us who argue that mandatory union dues are unconstitutional, period, that you should not be required to join any organization that you do not wish to join, and no one has the right to take dues from you just because you happen to work at a particular place. However, this one, anything that puts a limit to that is good. It's certainly going to make it harder for unions to expand in this format. And, you know, look, if unions are a great deal, people should be eager to sign up and get the union dues and pay their dues and get all the benefits of being part of the union. It seems that quite a few workers aren't convinced that joining a union is worth it. And that's, you know, part of being an American. Part of our concept of liberty ought to be your freedom to say, you know what, I don't want to join that union. I'm not going to. And again, look, you hate to see the Supreme Court turn into something that's seen through the lens of partisanship. But look, we have 4.5 conservatives or justices who we can think of as standing a kind of traditional or what I would just say is common sense interpretation of the law. And 4 justices who will do whatever the Obama administration wants, whenever they want, under any circumstances.
All right, on to the bad martini. And given all the different scandals that have been going on lately, this one has gotten attention, certainly on certain websites. Drudge Report's got it above the headline just about every day. But the crisis on the border, the flood of unaccompanied minors, 52,000 have now crossed the border. The Obama administration, this according to ABC News, I believe, in a dramatic escalation of its border control strategy, will seek more than $2 billion in emergency funds to help stem an influx of Central American women and children entering the country illegally, as well as new measures to more quickly deport those already here. You can basically read that as they want to build more detention centers. Nancy Pelosi decided to visit some of these detention centers over the weekend and says it's more of an opportunity than a crisis, using her best Rahm Emanuel analysis there. Jim, the quote that a lot of people are looking at today, this crisis that some call a crisis, we have to view as an opportunity. If you believe as we do, that every child, every person has a spark of divinity in them and is therefore worthy of respect. What we saw in those rooms was a dazzling, sparkling array of God's children worthy of respect. And so Nancy Pelosi is clearly going even further to the left in the Obama administration on this and suggesting that she doesn't see a problem with this flood of illegals at the border. So that, in addition to her saying that we're all Americans, North and South, so what's the problem here, suggests that she might not be the right person to lead on this issue.
Take that, straw man! Down, down! Ugh, got him! All right, you know. Finally, she boldly stands against all of the people who were calling for us to disrespect all of the children coming across the border. As soon as they come across the border, we should call them names and treat them badly and all that stuff. How dare you people suggest that? No, okay. A whole lot of very frustrating things coming from Nancy Pelosi's assessment of this issue. One thing that jumps out, apparently one of her other comments, she said, we are all Americans. Now, if she wants to mean, yes, we all geographically hail from two continents that are collectively called the Americas, yes, that is an accurate statement. But what she seems to be inferring here is that because they've crossed the border, you're now an American, which kind of suggests that American citizenship, which used to be a matter of law and an entire process of obtaining citizenship, is now a matter of geography, that simply by being here, you become an American. Muhammad Atta, 9/11 hijacker, by being here, is an American under the school of thought that Nancy Pelosi is advocating here. Now, I don't think she quite grasps the radicalization of this. I think she thinks it's a happy, you know, oh, kumbaya, we're all Americans. Aren't these kids cute? You know, not really thinking through the consequences of what she's saying here, what she clearly thinks is some sort of applause line back to her constituents in San Francisco. And this is kind of the third aspect. Periodically, I will hear things from folks on the right discussing this flood of kids coming across the border. And yeah, we should always speak with empathy. We should always try to understand these kids are probably scared and hungry and frightened and tired. They don't know what the future holds. Their parents have either sent them or you know, smugglers or people have said, go to America. Things are better there. Good luck, kids. And that's a terrifying circumstance for a kid to be put into. So we can react with a certain amount of empathy towards the plight of these kids. But let's turn this around, because Nancy Pelosi is the only time she's ever going to come encounter with an illegal immigrant is if one attends a special ceremony she's partaking in. She is never going to encounter, because she goes from fancy fundraiser to fancy office to fancy residence. That's her life. To paraphrase what Peggy Noonan said about Hillary Clinton, she sees life through tinted windows. Most of our elites live in a nice little air-conditioned bubble of life in which they never encounter illegal immigrants and the problems that some portion of them represent. The, you know, Pelosi's of the world are insisting that to be compassionate means we have to close our eyes to what is directly in front of us. This is no way to govern. This is no way to address problems, to pretend that they're not there. So more nonsensory from Nancy Pelosi is nothing particularly surprising. But for her to start insisting that this is an opportunity, this is some sort of good thing instead of that, I just yearn for the era when we had a governing class who actually saw problems as problems instead of opportunities for them to get what they wanted from before.
And just to go back to that money quote from the story, where she says that every person, every child has a spark of divinity in them. There was a dazzling, sparkling array of God's children worthy of respect. I'm guessing her statement on the Hobby Lobby decision today will not be an appreciative one of the 5-4 decision. Just to
Greg, every one of those children has a spark of divinity, except the ones that get aborted.
Jeez. All right. I wasn't sheeshing at you. I was sheeshing at her.
No. That's, you know,
political inconsistency. But on to the crazy martini, Jim. And we wanted to find something special for you on your first day back today. And Oklahoma last week had a primary for both Senate seats, actually, since they're both on the ballot this year. Big win for James Lankford, avoided a runoff in one of the key Senate races. The House races were all pretty standard according to form. One was Frank Lucas, who's chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. He's been in Congress a long time, defeated his nearest opponent 82-5. So you would think that was pretty cut and dried. However, his challenger is contesting the results, and KFOR-TV is explaining why.
You're used to seeing Congressman Frank Lucas on the campaign commercials.
Right, Frank?
That's right.
But his opponent this election, Tim Murray, isn't buying that this guy is the real deal.
It does come as kind of a shock to read
that you're not you.
Murray brings it up in his letter announcing his plans to contest Lucas's election, writing, "It is widely known Representative Frank D. Lucas is no longer alive and has been displayed by a lookalike. He did not return any of our messages, but his campaign website goes into detail about his theory that Lucas was hanged, executed by the World Court on or about January 11, 2011, in Ukraine. On Tuesday, 5% of Oklahomans voted for Murray. Lucas won, but since Murray believes Lucas is a fake, he wants those votes.
Many things have been said about me, said to me in the course of all my campaigns. This is the first time I've ever been accused of being a body double or a robot.
Jim, points for creativity, but there's a reason certain people don't get elected to office, and this is clearly one of them.
I suppose the only proper response to a candidate making that kind of an accusation is to say, man, I hate it when that happens. I mean, look, those of us with the breadth and depth of the pop culture education that we do realize that, look, when you suspect that your political opponent is not really your actual political opponent, there are a couple options here. Those familiar with S.H.I.E.L.D. will believe the life model decoy, the extremely lifelike robots that they have there. Cloning is always a possibility if by some chance your pseudo opponent passes a DNA test. My guess is that he was cloned in a vat. That's at the root of a lot of the Obama birth certificate theories, that he's actually a Kenyan clone in some sort of alien facility. Speaking of aliens, alien shapeshifters are a really booming industry. I guess the anytime you have a digital signal and it looks like the image gets blurry for a while, you might think that's a reception issue. It turns out it's actually these shape-shifting aliens losing their form momentarily. They usually regain it very quickly, so you have to look very closely, and for some reason it only shows up on television. But that's what the alien shapeshifters look like. My understanding is they're kind of like the aliens on V. They are lizard-like, and they like to eat, like that kind of stuff. Cloning, robots. By the way, if your opponent suddenly does seem Austrian, wearing dark glasses and looks like a biker, then in that case, he actually is a Terminator. At that point, you should probably stop running against him and start running from him in circumstances like that. That did happen to Gray Davis back in 2003 in California. So I'm trying to think of other examples in which candidates have been remember back in the good old days, Greg, when we used to think of the Torricelli maneuver in which they'd replace a candidate with a separate, different candidate?
Yes, absolutely.
So those are the good old days. We never knew. You know, because today they just replaced Torricelli with a Torricelli clone. I mean, we used to say, oh, that guy's a clone in the sense that he's, you know, ideologically identical. But now we mean genetically identical to the old-fashioned candidates they used to replace.
You know, you think of all the things your opponent will bring up in a debate.
Yeah, this is a sucker punch. This is one you really don't have any prepped response. This is more of the same old negative attacks from my opponent. No. This is a completely new and different negative attack from your opponent.
It's hard to imagine why he only got 5%. In fact, it's a little hard to imagine how he got up to 5%. But
only 5? You know.
Jim, welcome back.
Votes of clones count twice, by the way. So on that happy note, see you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. He is back, folks. He is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.